Have you ever looked at and read the cornerstone of our church? Do you even know where it is? Well, I'll point it out to you. It's right outside where the piano is located in the side wall up here by that window of St. Francis. You might want to take a look at it outside. It's all written in Latin, so you might not be able to translate it. But it was laid there in April 24th, 1921. Now, modern-day cornerstones are typically ceremonial, and as ours, some have the date of construction. Like the Latin inscription on our cornerstone. Well, others tell the story of the land where the building is erected. And still others are time capsules filled with items to be opened 100 years after the building's construction. Well, cornerstones today are not essential to the safe construction of the building. However, the ancient world, cornerstones were far different. Typically, a cornerstone was the first one laid, the best cut stone, the strongest stone on which the rest of the building would take shape. Architects would rely upon this perfect stone to set the stage for the design and strength of the building. So it wasn't ceremonial, but essential, like our faith in Jesus. In building anything, it is essential to have the right tool for the right job. I recently purchased a toolbox for the apartment I am renting in my retirement. As a renter, I hope that I will have little use of the tools in that box. Well, you can't make a souffle with a sledgehammer. However, assemble the right ingredients, put them into the proper relationships, and you can anticipate wonderful results. Well, today in the first letter of Peter, we heard the remarkable invitation to come to Jesus as a living stone. Nothing is less animate than a rock. Now, if you think like Michelangelo, you realize that a stone contains a world of possibilities. The stone carver has a bag full of tools to chisel this rock to fit perfectly into the space in a wall where it can be most useful. And each stone builds on the integrity of the whole until an edifice arises in which it plays a crucial supportive part. So today, let me point out four attributes of stone that comprise you and me, the church. Chosen, royal, priestly, and holy. The first, chosen. Each one of us in the assembly today has been chosen. We are not here by accident. Invited to the household of faith by our parents, most of us, who saw to our baptism, our religious education. Later, other mentors in the faith arise who shepherd us to the point of religious understanding and moral formation and living we now enjoy. And perhaps now you are issuing the invitation to family, friends, and community by your own example of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. The second attribute, royal. Our membership in the church makes us part of a royal family. I'm not referring to the family of Windsor, whose head is now King Charles III. No, the royal house of David entered into a sacred covenant with God once and for all to lead the people of God forever. And the birth of Jesus fulfilled the royal promise and is the heritage of the church. The third attribute, priestly. We are a priestly people. Obviously, not all of us are ordained to sacramental ministry, but all of us, by virtue of our baptism and confirmation, are sacramentally anointed for the service of God from whatever your present position is in the household of faith. I was especially impressed yesterday in the coronation of King Charles. I didn't watch it in one sitting, but I was impressed with the anointing ceremony, the anointing of a king. We were more specially anointed than King Charles, anointed with sacred chrism to be a priestly people, a royal people. And together, we are windows and doorways to the sacred for others. We are load-bearing walls meant to share burdens and shoulder responsibilities. We are archers and cathedral ceilings that lift us heavenward. We are paving stones others can pass over as they make their way toward religious understanding. We are bridges over troubled waters in the lives of those who suffer. And each one of us is anointed for our particular role, as just as the priest who stands at the table of the Lord. And the fourth attribute, holy, intrinsically holy we are. If the church teaches that life is a gift from God, profoundly sacred, that sanctity of being includes you and me. And this holiness is both a gift and a responsibility. We have the unmerited condition of participating in divinely inspired life and to live as if it were true. These four characteristics, chosen, royal, priestly, and holy, are the essence of the structure that contains us and the contents of the space that we likewise enclose and create. So as a living stone, how might you be called to create a home for others? Where do you fit in the structure of the church? Jesus used architectural imagery before the epistle writers. He described the house of his father as a dwelling place and sometimes a mansion with many rooms, or an estate encompassing many dwellings. The father's house, it's not spatial, it's relational, like the church. And so there is room for everyone who abides in Jesus as Jesus abides at the Father's side. Like Thomas's question in the gospel, we would all like a simple, clearly marked road to direct us to the Father's house, especially when we seem to either stumble suddenly into darkness or gradually wander away from old certainties. What we are offered is not a map, but a person, Jesus Christ, the way and the truth and the life. And when we journey along a well-traveled road, we trust the road because we know it has been made and used by others who have gone there before us, putting up bridges, neutral grounds, and detours where necessary. Others have traveled this way safely. And when both the way and the traveler who has gone before us is Jesus, we should journey with the greatest confidence. So if we've embraced Jesus as the living stone and the way, the truth, and the life, we will find our reservation in order when we arrive at our final destination.